Dinky Dawson, and Tony Rain, and we're kicking off our podcast, Two Pints in a Corner. Brian Washburn,
how are you?
Hey, Dinky, good. How are you?
It's Tony as well, Brian. How are you, man?
Hey, Tony. How you doing, Tony?
Doing great. And we have a
excellent
friend. We have a friend of ours here with us, Tim Miller.
Hey, Tim.
Not that Tim. It's a different Tim.
It's not the Tim Miller that you know.
I'm
the other Tim Miller.
This is Tim.
Well, hi, Tim Miller. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Tim was the entertainment editor of the Cape Cod Times until he retired, and we brought him into the East End to moderate and lob third-party questions in.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, you're not hearing a lot of extra noise, are you? Because I'm sitting in my car in the rain.
Oh, God. It's raining in St. Augustine? Good God.
It's raining in St. Augustine, yeah.
Wow. Oh, wow.
I was telling Donna the other week, that was one of my favorite places. I first came to the States in 75 and lived down there.
Oh, did you?
I used to drink at the White Lion. It was the closest thing to an English pub I could find.
Wow. I spent many a night in the White Lion.
I used to go there and play
during college. That was the best place to see a band.
There's a good English pub up on A1A, isn't there? Between there and Jacksonville.
Yeah. Yep. There's actually a couple in town now.
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
There's one on US-1 and one... right on the island, Anastasia Island.
Yeah. You know who's down there is... did you ever run into Terry Sylvester down there from the Hollies?
No.
He's living in St. Augustine somewhere. He has a condo there.
Oh, really?
There.
Okay.
Yeah, he's around.
There was one guy that was around here who lives down here, Levy. I can't remember. Rick Levy, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
I think he was in... who was he in? I don't think it was the Grassroots, but one of those bands from that time.
Yeah.
And he still plays around.
Yeah, that's fun. It's a great town. I love St. Augustine.
And then how long did you live here?
I didn't. I was there 75 till about 77. Then I went out to Austin. I was back there in 80. I was back in Jacksonville for about a year or so before I came up and got involved in the channel or any of that stuff. My wife had family down there.
Okay, because that was the same time frame that Donna and I met down here in college. We came here in 78, and we were here till 82.
Yeah, it was a little town then, wasn't it? It was nice.
Yeah, it was tiny. It's not the same anymore.
No, I know.
There's nowhere the same anymore.
No. Right. And I know, Dinky, you enjoyed St. Augustine. Fleetwood.
I enjoyed it very much there. Jim's still there. Jim Carrick's still down there.
I see him every now and then.
Him and a friend of his plays, but they don't go to do what they used to do because it's not that anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's changed drastically. So, so they're playing the old folks' places these days.
Yeah.
Afternoon gigs. They're doing a 3-to-5 shift.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's in bed by 7 or 8. I mean, including me.
Oh, well.
That's right. Yeah, I'd like to say
I am, but I'm not.
Well, you're not that bad in St. Augustine. It's worse down in Naples and down there, you know. My friend says all the old ladies drive, you see cars driving with people with no heads.
You can't see them, right?
You can't see them, little old ladies.
No, St. Augustine's good because we still have the college. I'm involved at the college, and so it's keeping me younger.
Yeah, no,
hey, congratulations. Congratulations. I hear that you've, I saw that you'd won with the tennis. They've done real well.
I just came from tennis practice. We won our season in our conference, and then we won the conference tournament. So now we're playing regional tournament on Monday, and if we win, then we go to the nationals for the third year in a row. So it'll be good.
Wow, congratulations, kiddo. That's good.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
It should do. It's good stuff.
So I'm sure Tim will have some questions for you. I was telling him about your involvement at the channel. This has been going pretty good, by the way. We've got about
Good.
We've got about 12 hours in, I think, right now. So
really, wow.
We'll get it broken down.
Yeah,
into
we
a
just
lot
had
of
Sandy
cats.
Just was on for half an hour. She just had a good
okay.
Yeah, and we, you know, what we've been trying to focus on. There was a channel podcast went up a couple of years ago or last year.
Right, the one that Harry did.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it. We just found it dealing with a lot of the negative stuff at the end.
Yeah.
And what Dinky and I are trying to put forth more is the fact that there was always a scene there from the 80s and the diversity of the club musically. The fact that that's what made it interesting.
Very interesting.
You know?
Yeah, well, there's nothing like it.
No. And the acts that we did, and when you look at the list and realize who actually was there, it's pretty mind-blowing. And people
it is.
Tend
it's
to forget
very
it,
mind-blowing.
You know? Yeah. And I know you were very integral in a lot of the local stuff, and that was the other thing. I mean, nobody else was really given bands the opportunity on that organized a level, I don't think.
Right.
You know, with the ticketing system and the way that we progressed them through.
Oh,
You know, if you brought tickets on a weeknight, tell us a bit about that, because you kind of ran with that more than I did. After I'd gone, but it was a good system.
Yeah, the system worked. Not all the bands were happy about it, but it was a good system. I mean, you had to prove you had some drawing power. A lot of people didn't like it because it wasn't based basically on musicianship,
right.
Not for the early week. It was more on how many people you could get. Then if you could get people in the door, then you would progress towards the weekend. And if you were a really good band, you were given some leeway. Like there were bands that could bring in a couple hundred people on a Monday or Tuesday night, but were terrible.
Right.
Well, they wouldn't get right to the weekend. But if they were decent, then they would move up to Thursday night, things like that.
Yeah,
I saw it from both sides because playing in my band, we had to do the ticket as well.
Right, right. I remember that.
So that was one thing when I was the local booking agent that I was able to say, hey, my band's doing it, so don't be telling me, this isn't part of it and all of that. It is. I mean, because you got to keep the doors open, you know?
Right. Then we'd take the bands that weren't very good but could get a draw and put four of them together. And have a real bad night musically, but the place would be full.
Yeah, exactly. And then sometimes that you would put them on the first opening slot, because I mean there were a lot of times, even on the weekends, where there were like four bands in a night. You put them on early. All their fans come and they drink. They've got on their tickets. They've got the name of the headlining band, so they're hopefully they're going to stick around after their set. And just you want to just kind of keep them there. I mean, it was a good system, and that's why a lot of clubs started doing the same thing.
Yeah,
we had a good chat.
But I know that it was tough for bands that had been established and then say they broke up, and then their splinter band would start. Well, they would think they would start at the weekend.
At the next level,
like that.
Right.
Each band had to prove themselves as they went along. And I tried to be as fair as possible. And there were bands that some were requested by other bands to play with them. So you try to accommodate, but you also got to make sure that you're getting enough people to support the night.
And then we'd need favors to fill in enough bands, and we'd have to pay them back with gigs. Yeah. we had a good one the other week with John Farrell from a band called Three Hands, who'd opened, I think, for James Brown. And he had a great story about never even seeing James Brown.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, depending on when you played in the night and who it was, I mean, you might not ever see the headliner, because sometimes you couldn't get it in time to do a sound check,
right.
So you wouldn't see their sound check, or if they just didn't want to talk to people, they wouldn't. I mean, the band that I was in first was me and the boys, and we opened for the Radiators three times, and they were so nice to us. I mean, they always were chatting with us and stuff like that. And then you would get other bands again, but that They didn't care. They came to their show, and that was it.
Yep. It's always been tough.
Of the local bands, which ones, you know, you were saying that some of them were so good that you would kind of give them slack on the, you know, bringing in the crowd. So who were some of the local bands that kind of stood out to you as far as?
Well, I remember a band that comes to mind that I can't remember their drawing power, but they were actually signed to an indie label, was Gigolo Ant.
Oh, yeah.
They were a Gigolo really Ant. Good band.
Yep.
And they kind of deserve to be up in that the weekend spot, you know. So even if they didn't draw huge when they first started, they would be towards that.
Yeah.
And most likely if I remember right, they would be probably in the middle on the bills on the weekend. Mm. But they were good.
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of off. I mean, this is so long ago.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of.
When I was there, we started the ska stuff a lot with those kind of, you know, Bim's Galabim and.
Yeah. Shrimp. Oh,
they're still at it. Yeah, Bim's Galabim still playing.
They wound up being able to headline the place because they just had such a big following, but also were a big band. They had a lot of. If I remember correctly, the radio stations were behind them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's things like Think Tree and stuff like that.
If you could
get Connect behind them, then they were going to be there no matter what.
Right.
Know?
Yeah, they were all good at schmoozing the radio guy. You know, it was all. It was the old world. It was pre-internet, so it was all a matter of one-on-one.
They had good management, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if I remember, I think David Mars was really involved with them a lot.
Yeah, the Entertainment Network.
They put all the local booking before I started.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. When did you start, Brian?
Oh, God. I can't tell you the date. But if you could figure out when David Mars left, that's when I started.
Is that when you came in? Yeah, well, Mars was there when we were there in 87. I left in 87 the first time.
I first started just working the day office. I was just doing the phones and the guest list and stuff like that. And that's probably when I first met you.
Yeah.
And then David left and I took over the booking.
Right.
And it just progressed from there. But I met David through Play It. So my introduction to the club was from the musician side, not just being hired to do the office. I kind of started to meet everybody and then got hired to work there and then progressed. But it started from playing the club.
Yeah, you were there a long time,
that,
I know.
That famous sound man, Dinky Dawson, mixing us up.
Right.
How could we go wrong?
Right, with the big sound system.
And Donna taking photographs and what have you.
Donna taking photographs and then you remember Greg Klassen.
He's
lighting director for Extreme and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, he used to teach Donna how to do the light.
He did. That's why she said that. Yeah.
I've seen Greg a number of times over the years at the Melody Tent.
I bump into him whenever he's on some tour that comes down through here.
Right,
to get in touch with him.
Yeah, I think he was with Tedeschi for a while, I think. I think I've done him with Tedeschi.
He was with Johnny Lang.
That's right. I did him with Johnny Lang several times, yeah.
Did he just go out with... Oh, God, he just was on a good double bill. And I want to say Mark Farner, but I might be thinking of a different guy.
Yeah, I've run into him a few times. And Tom Hembridge, I stay close to Tom Hembridge.
I do too. I try to see him whenever he comes through. He's coming through in the summer with Buddy Guy on the farewell tour.
Yeah, he's out right now.
It's just in Boston right now.
Yeah,
I saw that. I saw that listed that he was up there. And Tom is such a great guy. See, that's another thing about working at the channel is I became friends with a lot of people who are still in the business and still doing great.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to see them and still catch up with them every now and then. Like when the last time we were in Boston, we saw Sal Baglio.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing the Beatles show with Chachi.
Right. I was just talking to Chachi last week. I'm doing a Beatles show with him this summer.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And then I see Tom every once in a while.
Yeah.
But just to know, like, Tom Termini's still working long ago, and all those guys are still involved in music. It's really nice to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very cool. It's very cool.
Hey, do you see that Domingo there? He's an artist. His dad is an artist.
Yeah, I know. He's following his dad's footsteps. I have a funny story about Domingo, which it just shows you how small this world is. I drove up to Boston to pick Holly up from college.
Yeah.
And we decided we were going to stop in D.C. Because that's basically... A good break point on that long drive.
Oh, it is.
So
yeah.
We're walking around, and I'm standing. Holly and I are standing at the Washington Monument, just looking. And all of a sudden, I turn around, and Domingo is standing there. So we just hung out. He was basically killing time too. I think he was doing something with his daughter there. So yeah. We just hung out and walked and looked at some of the monuments. But how ironic it was just to, out of in Washington, D.C., to turn around and there's Domingo.
Amazing. Oh, yeah.
And at that time, he had, like, leopard spotted hair. Really, it was so surreal.
That's great.
He goes to Spain a lot, I guess. The family's got a place there. And he's got shows right now in Boston. He's got him and his dad's got a show together.
That's so cool. His artwork is really nice. Really by what I've seen on Facebook, it's really, really good.
It is. Yeah, it's definitely good. His dad's even one on his son, I think.
Well, I guess he's pretty famous by what I understand.
I believe it with what he's doing. It's good stuff to see that. But he still likes to be able to go in and make his drinks. I saw a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, that's what he was doing when I bumped into him. He was a mixologist, he was doing, like, different, I think it was contests and everything else.
Oh, yeah,
he was also, he was also, like, teaching and stuff. Yeah, so
I saw that, doing mixed drinks, doing all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it was at a time he was trying to get funding because he wanted to have a bus. That was basically a traveling bar that you would be mixing drinks on and stuff like that. But I don't know. I don't think he ever got it all together.
No, he's got more into the artwork like his dad.
Yeah.
So that he can go back and forth to Spain. He takes his daughter and that kind of thing. Uh-huh. And,
but I mean, it's so funny because you look now, like in Nashville, they've got all those party bicycles. And everybody's drinking. And that's down here. There's these boats that are the same thing. It's like a pedal boat. You pedal, and it's like a tiki hut on the water. And you do the same thing, and it's like, wow, Domingo was ahead of his time.
Well, the channel was ahead of its time, I think, too.
For sure.
It's too bad.
You're still keeping in touch with Joe Filoni?
Yeah, not as much, but I still do every now and then. And if I see a post, I'll sometimes send him a message and We talk on the phone maybe like once a year or something like that.
So you're not seeing that? Well, he's been doing lots of music with Hirst Gardner, I gather. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know that. I know that. And that's good. I know he's keeping busy, so that's good. And wasn't he doing something? Was John Butcher doing something with
that? John and them have got the same... You know, clientele around them and stuff, and they're doing that.
Yeah.
It's like Stompers and Fools. They're together still, you know, doing this, that, and the other. Then Sal will split up and do his thing, like you said, with different people.
And Sal plays with Tom.
And he's got the amplifier heads. I know he does a show with John Butcher and I think Alan Estes.
That's right, with Alan.
So it's good to see that these guys are still out there. I probably am in more communication through messaging with Sal than any of the other guys, really.
Yeah,
I see Sal once in a while. I've seen him over the years at the tent because he comes in with Tommy with Hembridge. I'm hoping to do a Tom show on the Cape as well in August. I think I've got Tom's band coming.
Sal is such a good guy, and Tom. I mean, they're both. I mean, you're not going to find very many people who are so nice and so accessible and appreciate their friendship. You know,
I'm the same way. It's the people who've stayed in it and are around it. You know, it was so diverse at the channel, and everybody was wanting to get in the creative end.
Yeah.
Even though we were all in the, all we were doing was really slinging booze. It was a gin mill, but it was
it was a point of entree.
Yeah, it got us all in the business.
Friendship that were built there.
Oh yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, it was definitely a.
I mean, that was definitely a highlight of my life. I would never trade anything. No. I remember when I went to work for the Phoenix newspaper.
Yeah,
and the big guy, not Mindich, but I can't remember his
Steve, his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was good, but his Barry, I can't remember Barry's last name.
Oh yeah.
He was like, well, you know, you wasted 10 years of your life in this music thing.
No.
And I said, well, you know what? Not a minute of that was wasted, because
absolutely,
it was such a great time and shaped me in so many different ways, you know.
Well, I think that's I was in the food and beverage business before, and just working with people in the front of house, back of house, different departments, the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the diversity of the shows is what we keep coming back to.
Yeah.
Because it was a different club every night. And a lot of people didn't see that. People in the audience saw it from their perspective of what they were seeing and what the vibe was that night, whether it was metal or world music or whatever. But for us, watching it change every night and dealing with all the different personalities that made up all the different shows, that's what fascinated me.
I mean, I know Donna told you the story about the Hell's Angels, and I think it was like the Christmas party or whatever. But I mean, it was different. It depended on what night you went, because the audience would just change completely.
Yeah, I was there that night, and I was telling my wife, we were talking, and I remember going home and telling her we were doing a Hell's Angels fundraiser, and she said, "Well, what happens if somebody just walks in off the street?" I said, "Well, if they fall over the 600 Harleys in the parking lot, they probably shouldn't be in there.
Yeah, they wouldn't be with us anymore."
Yeah. You would have an indication of what was going on by the parking lot.
What were you doing at the Phoenix? What did you do?
I did advertising, sales, and basically I was the club person. I did all the clubs and did the listings.
Oh, okay.
And I also put together the band guide.
Oh, okay.
So I used to sell a lot of ads for that and stuff. I think I was there like 2 years, three years, something like that.
Yeah.
But it was something to do. Because I left the channel
the end of 90.
When the Bob was coming in, I went out.
Right, and they brought me back in. I still have your book. I still have your booking book.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you're the last one, the 1991, because you loaded up the local acts when I came back in.
I did some nationals. So I left there, and then, and that's when we also started to have our kids, so I wound up... through Brad Mindich, who worked at the channel.
Brad was working with me,
because he was probably still there after I left.
He stayed with me that summer.
Yeah, and so then he got me the job at the Phoenix, and that's when I was told by Barry that I wasted all these years with music.
Yeah, Brad was there, and Diane Monk was still there with me.
Yeah, Diane Monk and...
Jackie was the artist, and
Jackie was the artist who took over from Lisa.
She was teaching me how to run Mac Quark systems and make the posters and stuff, because that was all brand new then. And Diane's, though, do you stay in touch with Diane Monk? She's done very well.
Every once in a while I'll see something on Facebook and I'll send her a message, but not that much. But she's still involved in A&R, is it, or something?
She's with Sony Country. Yeah, I ran into her in Nashville a few times.
Okay,
she's done really well with the labels,
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, a few of them.
She was really nice. But, I mean, I could say that about everybody who worked there. I don't think I ever ran across anybody that I didn't like. They were all nice people.
And I think that's an interesting thing about it as well. The perception of the channel was always as the dirty, dingy club in South Boston. And nobody really got the fact that we were all really into it for the art of it, you know?
Yeah, no, because you hate to use the cliche, we were living the rock and roll life, but we were.
We were
involved in music in the city. And
we were inventing it.
Because somebody has blue hair or blue lips and tattoos or whatever, that's just that judgment of a rocker. But they didn't realize how close everybody was.
No, that's to say the diversity. I mean, I used to love seeing the place go from the hardcore all ages Sunday afternoon and close at 5 o'clock and then open with a world beat show at night.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
A full on reggae show.
I mean, some of the shows that Sean would bring in, they were good shows, and that was a different side with all, I guess it was thrash and stuff, shows and metal shows.
Yeah, we were all over the place, and it was that's what made it interesting.
Yes, exactly. And if you were someone who didn't know anything about the channel, and like you said, if you went there 7 nights in a row, you would see 7 totally, completely kind of acts.
And the afternoon shows and stuff like that.
And the afternoon. I mean, and the BCN shows were always so good.
The lunchtimes,
Yeah, Donald used to come out in the BCN shows just with a camera just to take the whatever.
Yep. You know, I flung a few hot dogs at that.
Yeah. Not dogs.
Not dogs.
Yeah, but it was a fun time.
That was a good vibe. What was your favorite show, Brian, in there ever?
Oh God, like what you just said about the diversity. It's so hard to pick a favorite. But I'll say I'll go with some of the classics. Like I saw James Brown, Roy Orbison, Ian Hunter. Bo Diddley playing
with Ron Wood.
Yep. I mean, and John Entwistle's band and stuff. Yep. I mean, there was just so much. I can't really pick a favorite.
Right.
That's good. It's tough.
What's that?
That's good. It's tough.
Those are good ones.
Yeah, no, I know. It's like saying, which child of yours do you prefer?
You got questions, too?
And if you have a favorite, you better not say it.
Yeah, there were some good nights, that's for sure. Patty was
there. Yeah, it was just incredible. And then, again, that place was so crazy, you would never know who would walk in the door. Like, I remember when Jimmy Page was there, and Dinky, you had the Fleetwood Mac people there. I mean, it was
Christine.
Crazy.
Yeah, Bono was in there one night. Yeah.
Yeah, Bono, right?
Bono was in, yeah.
He was in the back room.
Yeah. I know Roger Clemens came in because I talked to him on the phone. He came in for a boxing match that was on pay-per-view, and he was supposed to give me a baseball sign, and Peter Boris gave it to Lembo.
Lembo was there towards the end of it. I see Lembo once in a while. He's on the Cape.
Do you?
He's around. He's on the Cape, yeah.
Because
he came in right at the end as well for a while.
Yeah.
Where is Warren? Is he still doing the theater in Medford?
No, he's been out of there for years. Bill Blumenreich took that. I did a show with Warren when he was there, when he was at the Chevalier, and he was running it for the town.
Yeah.
And then he was supposedly working on a book, and then I think he started some corporate booking agency. And that's the last I heard he was doing was corporates.
Wedding things.
Weddings and corporates, yeah, he was trying to get that.
Okay, because someone had said he thought he was down here, and I don't think so.
He could be at this point. I lost touch with him quite a while ago.
Because I know Mike Carr moved down to South
Park. Mike Carr's down there. I see him on Facebook. He's down in Lauderdale, I think, and he was running a venue.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was running a venue for the city, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
How did you get involved in tennis? Like, were you involved with tennis when you were at the channel?
Okay. Here's a long story. I'll try to make it short. The college that I'm an assistant coach for is the college that Donna and I went to, mm-hmm. and we met there. But I played baseball for the college.
That's what I figured.
And being in sports there, I became friends with a lot of the tennis players. So I would hang out with them, and every once in a while hit a little bit with them. Not that I was good or anything. But it's a game that my family used to play. My mom was used to love tennis. We used to go to the U.S. Open and stuff.
Oh, cool.
So what happened is when Donna and I, well, before Donna and I moved back, we, like I said, we had kids, and I became involved and ran a little tennis program after school for children. So I did that up while I was living in Cambridge. Then when I moved, we moved here about 21 years ago, and I started to go and participate in a tennis clinic that was held once a week with a coach who was actually the women's coach from when I was there, mm-hmm. and he was still the coach. So I started doing that, and then he asked me to get certified, and I started teaching the clinics with him and teaching lessons. And he, as he was still the coach, he would have me come out every once in a while and hit balls, feed balls to the team.
Yeah.
So then he left, and a new guy came in, and he involved me even more, where I became an assistant and was at all the matches on the court, at every practice, basically, and traveled just within the Florida area because he would share the hotel room with the girls' coach when they usually played the same. Then all of a sudden, they stopped playing the same date, and I was starting to travel. So now I travel to every match. I'm at every match. I'm at practice three times a week because I still work.
Yeah.
And then and it's just snowballed from there.
Yeah.
So it's been good. I don't know how much longer I can honestly do it, but the team has been playing great. And this is the third coach that I'm involved with now because this guy Thomas went back to the college as head coach for where he played. So now this new coach has been here 3 years, and it's been really good. These last 3 years, we've been very successful.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
So, do you still have time? It sounds like you're pretty busy. I mean, do you have time for music? Do you get to hear much music now?
I try to go out and listen now and then. I had a band up until 2 years ago, and we just stopped. I was honestly the youngest guy in the band, and our drummer was the oldest, and he said he just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And so instead of going through the whole route of trying to find a drummer and all that, I just said, well, that'll be it then. And we were together for like 10 years.
Oh.
And Dinky, you remember... well, now I'm drawing a blank. Jim Stafford, Eclipse Studios.
Yeah. Jim's great.
We recorded a CD there, and I mean, it's still up on Spotify and everything. It still gets at least a couple songs listened to every month, and that was like 12 years ago. But they just got to a point where the band, it was just too hard to fit that in.
Yeah.
But now our daughter Holly's moving back, and she plays guitar and sings and writes songs. So the two of us may actually get to do a little acoustic.
That sounds nice, actually.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. It's good we're all still around. It's good we're all still around.
We'll see. I'm going to have to let her run it because if she's not going to listen to me. No, I only have all this experience, but she knows better. So,
yeah. Well, I'm still trying to put shows on the Cape. I just retired from South Shore Playhouse after 29 years. So I kept going for a while, and I'm looking to do smaller things and acoustic stuff and a little more artsy and shows.
Do you have places do the bars and restaurants have a lot of acoustic music?
To a degree, but it's a lot of, the business, as we know, it's changed. I mean,
Yeah.
So much of the tribute stuff, and that's one thing I was going to say to you. You know, everybody's talking about tribute bands.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's a new thing. Well, we were doing tributes at the Channel all through the 80s there. We were doing The Wall.
The Blushing Brides.
The Blushing Brides and Diver.
The Blushing Brides always come to mind about when you hear anything about
Diver Down.
Diver Down.
Remember
them?
The Van Halen guys? Who was the... There was a Hendrix one back then called Bold as Love, out of Connecticut. Tommy Major had a couple of tributes back then. Texas Flood and Four Sticks, and there were all kinds of tributes.
It's big here too. I mean, the tribute stuff is big. I mean, down in Daytona, it's like every weekend they have these tribute shows. And I know a guy here who goes down every time and comes. Oh, yeah, I saw The Who last night. Oh, yeah, I saw this. Didn't really see The Who.
Somebody said.
I remember the Blushing Brides when they came to the Channel.
Norris.
When they were like at Soundcheck, they're walking around and all with these British accents and all in character the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to myself, how weird it must be to live somebody else's
identity.
All
yeah, I remember Maurice's name was, right? The Mick. Maurice was Canadian.
All right.
Somebody said to me one night, I went to see the Pretenders. They were a tribute band.
Oh, my God. Well, that's a good name for a tribute band.
Exactly.
Yeah, hey, nice one.
I remember when I first got to Boston, Al Halliday was doing a Springsteen show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was good, too. He was good at it.
Dinky and I were just talking about the Swinging Erudites earlier.
Oh, yeah, with Johnny Angel?
Yeah, Johnny Angel. I used to love that
he's
band.
He's out of California.
Right. That was a great act.
They were a good band.
They were a good band.
I have their album.
did you see Spinal Tap?
I wasn't there at the club when they played.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's something I wish I could have seen. I think I was probably still in college at that time down in Florida.
Right. There we go. That was great, Brian. Thanks for getting with us.
Oh, no problem. No problem.
It's great to talk to you.
Has a half hour gone already?
I don't know. I'm just chatting away.
Yeah, this is fun.
We'll probably bash this one up with Donna's and make one out of it, you know?
I don't know how you're going to edit it because it was kind of just stream of consciousness.
Yeah, it's all good. We'll figure it out.
That's what we want. You know,
there was never a dull moment.
No. Donna mentioned about she was... I'm trying to remember the guy's name. You already brought him up.
He was Ian Hunter.
Ian Hunter. Yeah. Mick Ronson.
Mick Ronson.
Yeah.
Right. I remember this.
You're Mick's girl.
The guy, the sound man who was doing the monitors, looked at me with hate in his eyes because of Mick's girl. that was funny.
That's great.
That's the way Donna put it. She couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, they were great people too. They were so nice. And I remember we were hanging out with Michelle and Kim from the Bristols.
Yeah.
And
Kim Ernst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I grew up with her.
Tim.
Oh yeah.
Tim grew up with her in Detroit.
Yeah. My mom and her mom were like best friends in college. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. I remember Kim when she was like about 10.
Yeah.
Isn't that Tim and I?
Wow.
Tim and I ran into her at a Nick Lowe show, right?
No, it was one of her.
Oh, it was one of her bandmates.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bristol.
So Mick came over and Ian both came over to talk to not me, it's Donna, Kim, Michelle, over on the dance floor with the backstage area. That was a fun night.
I love the Bristols. They were one of my favorite bands there.
That was the Channel. Stuff like that, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And working there and being able to see all these guys at soundcheck or at the end of the night, like having Bo talking with B.B. King in the office and stuff.
Yep, all
and
that stuff.
I had meeting Debbie Harry on my birthday, and she signed a picture and kissed me on the cheek. I mean, those are things that other people just don't ever get to experience.
They don't get that stuff. That's right. No, that's great. That's great.
Exactly.
But it's great to catch up with you, Brian. I hope we can stay in touch.
Yeah, we'll see.
Tony, it was great to talk to you. And Tim, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too, Brian.
Always a pleasure, Dinky.
Same here, Brian, from you.
I haven't laughed this much since the last time I saw you.
Great.
So we got to keep doing this kind of thing.
Great.
Yeah, good laughing beginning in the morning is a good thing.
Yes, it is. It is. It's going to make the rest of the day much better.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. Okay. Let me tell you.
Well, right, thank you guys for including me, and I look forward to hearing all this. Good luck with the editing.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Oh, yeah, we'll get there.
Great.
Hang in,
Brian.
It was a great time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, Brian. Right. Have a good one, kiddo.
You too. Say hi to Nancy.
Hi, Brian.
She's here. She's overseeing two pints of corn.
A little fly on the wall.
Every episode.
She's the brains in the outfit.
Oh, okay. I could have figured she was there. Now I feel bad I didn't say your name earlier. too much.
Take care, man.
Now I have to go into. I will. Now I have to go into the motor vehicles because they set my registration and never came, so I'm ready to go battle with them.
Usual stuff.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. All right, have a great day.
Thank you, too. Thank you, Brian. Take care.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye.